Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000. Hello once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening to The Quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we are getting so very, very close. And so our big topic will be talking to Brian about nearing the end of his quest. We'll be looking at top five movie endings, according to Brian. And we'll be probably going off course at least a couple of times talking about different things associated with the movies Brian has seen or just other random thoughts that pop into our heads. Before we get to all those discussions, though, let us once again say thank you to you who are listening to this podcast for downloading and sharing it, hopefully, with others that you know. You can find Brian on Twitter at 10kmovies, T-E-N-K movies, or on his blog, 10kmovies.com. As always, though, Brian, now we start with the number film that you have watched.
As of today, I have watched 9,990 different movies.
Oh, man, we are at the 10 left on this quest. So what was your 9,990th movie?
It's a movie directed by Christopher Guest called The Big Picture. It was a good little movie, and it's sort of a parody of an up-and-coming director who is signs with a Hollywood studio to make a movie, and he has, you know, the problems of trying to get his vision and mesh it with what the studio insists, and it's just a satire of Hollywood.
So another one of those kind of mockumentaries, like A Mighty Wind.
Although he didn't quite get to the mockumentary concept yet, but it's you can see it coming from there. Yeah.
Did it have a lot of the same actors?
Michael McKean, of course, who I think they have a blood pact that they're going to be in anything that each other does. Other than that, you know, that same group, some of them.
No Eugene Levy?
No Catherine O'Hare, no Fred Willard, you know, Jane Lynch. None of those people showed up, or at least I didn't see them. The star was Kevin Bacon.
Oh, nice.
And he had Kevin Bacon in it. Had John Cleese. Martin Short had a pretty substantial part. Elliot Gould was in it playing sort of a caricature of himself. It was early, because it's 89, so it's Christopher Guest kind of breaking out on his own and sort of making his own movies, but it was pretty good.
So tell us, how does it feel like to be at 10 movies left with over 10 months left to go, or about 10 months to go?
Yeah, it's satisfying. I mean, you know, at this point you know you're going to do it, and you know, it's also sort of like, what kind of like motivating thing do you have now that you want to do? What sort of thing out there do you want to say, I'm going to do this? Because, you know, how much motivation can you have to check movies off just these random lists according to these websites? Like, I don't know that I want to do that now.
Well, that brings up an interesting question then, too, is, you know, as you are nearing the end, do you feel like you love movies more, less, the same?
I feel like my palate is expanded. I mean, I feel like I have an appreciation for movies of a certain type that I would not, you know, maybe I've always sort of wanted to like more, but now I do. I feel like, particularly stuff like horror movies that I just never, when you were a kid, I would run it high when my brother would watch the horror. So I never really got into that when I was of the age where I would have. I was a little too timid or too scared and that kind of stuff. And then there's some genre of foreign films that I didn't really had not really watched a lot of, but now some of them I really do love. So I would just say that overall, no, my love is not more deeper, but it's wider.
Huh, that's fascinating. I feel like your pace really picked up over the last 6 months or so. What do you attribute that to? Did you find another cache of short films that you're able to add to your account?
At a certain point, like a year and a half ago over that summer, I said, hey, if I'm going to do this, I got to make sure that I'm ahead of the game. I don't want to be, have this crunch to where I just don't have time. So I made a conscious effort then, and the same thing this summer. It was a lot of short films, a lot of finding those and going through those, and a lot of particularly short silent films from the first decade of the 20th century and then the 19-teens and that kind of stuff.
And I'm guessing that the sites that you've used a lot were really helpful. iCheck Movies, is that the mainstay for you?
I still, when I watch something, I don't intend to completely, just cut those out of my life or my sort of routine. We won't go into how many times or how often I frequent them. It does seem a little bit maybe too obsessive. But, I'll continue to do that, and I'll continue to, work my way through some of their lists. It just won't be at any sort of a pace, and if there's movies that I just can't find, I won't, obsess over how I can find them. I'll just wait until they either come or they don't. It won't be I hope that's the way I envision this working, and I hope it works that way.
You said before that in some ways it was your wife who maybe regrettably, unwittingly, spurred this quest on. How is she feeling about that as you get close to the end? How other people who know about it, what are they saying?
I mean, she's encouraged me to sort of take a break. To not be as always trying to catch something on your phone or watch something, for a few minutes here and then pick it back up later and just sort of, just to sort of let things progress more slowly, more naturally, I guess, than trying to force feed yourself or plow through a certain number or whatever. So
that's good. So that's a great segue because what we're going to do on this podcast is we are going to kind of change our format up a little bit for the end of this quest, and that we are going to take a deep dive rather than kind of talking about different topics about films and that kind of things. We'll sit down after you've watched each of the films that'll make up your final 10 and just give you a chance to kind of break them down, what you liked about them, what you didn't like about them, what they made you think of, other films they reminded you of or connected you to, and we'll do that kind of thing before then maybe going into some different top fives related to the film. So that begs the question then now too, have you started to think about what some of the final 10 may be for you?
I have, and before I go into what those are, I want to say one thing that doing it this way and focusing on each one is forcing me to sort of slow down and not just, go through 10 next week and I'm done. Although I will say that the hard part has been, in the past week, the Golden Globe nominations came out, and a part of me just wants to run and find and see as many of them as possible right now. Like, a part of me just wants, I just have this, itch, I haven't seen this or this or this or this or this or this, and it's like, so doing this is helpful because it's forcing me to sort of slow down and sort of put those things out and sort of be okay without chasing that list or that completion or chasing after something and just sort of seeing it as a way to enjoy it on its own without where does it fall in a list or in a progress sort of thing.
And enjoying it as maybe you would maybe a 7-course meal as opposed to a fast food meal.
So, having said that, I am appreciative of this process because it is helping me to sort of wean myself off of a certain mentality. Well, one of the movies I know that I'll see in the next 10, I've got a couple of them in mind. One of them is going to be Mary Poppins Returns. My guess is we'll either go see that Christmas Day or around that time with my family because we watched Mary Poppins not long ago. Another one will be, I would feel remiss if I didn't include something of Bill Murray in the final 10. So a movie that I've long wanted to see, his version of A Razor's Edge, which is 84, 85, That's going to be one of the final 10. Beyond that, I got some ideas. Nothing final. Those are the only two that I'm 100% certain of. I know those will be in the final 10. You know, and it depends, too, on how long this 10 process happens. You know, if I still have gotten to February or March without having completed the 10, then Captain Marvel may very well be one of the final 10, because I'm not going to wait beyond that to see that movie.
Well, it sounds like that it'll be a little bit difficult to, to kind of quit altogether cold turkey. So are there other ways that you're going to kind of occupy that movie-watching space?
We've talked about this. I don't know if I talked about it with in the podcast, but one of the things I'm doing is I am going through, and we've talked about before that I'm not a huge believer in rewatching movies, and I'm not in general. But that, you know, as I go through the list, there are a lot of movies that, because I go to this one website and I kind of log when I watched the movies, so I can sort of see, and also, you know, depressingly, you can see how much time you spent in a particular year watching movies. But that's another story. But, so I've gone through and I've seen, and there are right now about 68 movies that I can't tell you when I watch them. So one of the things I'm doing is I'm rewatching those, and just sort of so that I can point to and say, I watched this here, I watched this then, that kind of thing. There are some other things I'm looking at too, like on the list of movies I've logged, there are not many, but some that I have not watched. Most of them I've watched since 2010. I really started this process in sometime in the year 2010, maybe in 2009. And most of them I've seen since then. There are some I haven't. And some of them I haven't seen since, you know, early to mid-90s. And so I'm thinking maybe I'll rewatch some of those so that I can see if my opinion of them has changed as I have hopefully matured in the 20 years since. And I am willing. You know, some people are sort of like, when they watch a movie and they assign it a ranking and they know where it is, that's where it is. And I have found, as I've rewatched some lately, I'm more than willing to say I was wrong, and I appreciate this movie now in a way I didn't then, and so I moved it. So I'm adjusting my rankings, and I think that's the only fair way to do it, is to say, hey, I've seen this again, so I know where it is now.
So that, again, that's something you are continuing to do as well as you watch movies. It's something we haven't really emphasized a lot when we have recorded this podcast, is that you rank all these movies as well, 1 to 10,000, or
right,
1 to 9,990. You know, Groundhog Day is still number one.
Groundhog Day is still number one.
Weekend at Bernie's,
9,990th. And 9,990th is a Three Stooges short called The Yolks on Me, and I dude, I think it's I can't imagine how it wasn't offensive then. It's only more offensive now. And I just loathe it. I mean, it gives me itchy feelings, like, just thinking about it. It's so horrible. It's wrong-headed. I'm almost willing to say it's evil.
That's, well, you wouldn't have it ranked so low if it wasn't.
All the movies in my bottom list are movies that I watch because I was on this streaming site called Mubi, M-U-B-I, and I don't know if it's pronounced Mubi, but that's how I said it. But one of the movies that, and they do a curated thing where they put a movie out every day. And I was watching whatever movie they put out, and a couple of them were, that's embarrassing to say a little bit, but they were maybe one step above softcore pornography, and they're at the bottom of the list. I mean, it's bad. And so I'm like, I can't recommend this to anyone. I wouldn't recommend it for myself, so.
And so as you look at these final 10, I'm guessing you're thinking, you're trying to shoot maybe for some movies that you hope will be at the more of the top of your list, rather than the bottom.
I would hope that they are about 3.5 stars or better. I would hope, which means roughly I'm saying that they're in the top 3,500.
Okay. Well, that's I think good place to kind of put a pin in this part of the conversation, and to say, you know, again, that the next episode that we will record will be on whatever next movie that Brian watches, whatever he selects to be number 10 in his top 10 countdown, so that we're kind of nearing the end of this podcast journey ourselves. Probably will be a few more episodes than just 10, because I think we I personally, anyways, would hope that we can stretch this out to have another Groundhog Day episode and talk about that movie again, as we have in the past. And maybe another one that's sort of a little bit more of a retrospective, kind of sharing things that Brian's really appreciated, highs and lows again, along the way. But before we end this podcast episode, we do want to do another top five. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, thought it might be good, since we are getting close to endings, to talk about movie endings. What are Brian's top five movie endings of all time, of the 9,990 movies he has seen?
No pressure. This is an unscientific
I'm going to guess that the Yoko and You could actually be number one, because you were just glad it was over.
Yeah,
but that may not have made the list.
The worst. The worst.
What is number five?
Okay, number five, a movie that ends on a happy note, after a bit of a dark turn there for a minute, but it's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
The Gene Wilder version?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it that you love about that ending?
Oh, I love it when he gets in the glass elevator and he flies up in the... That's great. That's great. Charlie now has the keys to the kingdom. He owns the chocolate factory. What is not to love about that?
Did you see the SNL skit from a couple of weeks ago on Charlie
the
Chocolate
Factory?
Where
the hell is this elevator going? Like, why are we in the elevator?
I'm a little surprised by that one. That one feels a little... not what I was expecting, but give us number four.
Well, number four is a classic from my formative years, and I'll leave it with you like this. Roads, where we're going, we won't need roads.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a great ending. I mean, like, Doc Brown comes back from the future, and it's like so, like, out of nowhere, and we didn't, and I mean, at the time, I don't even know that they anticipated really following through and making that second movie.
That's what I remember about that too. Whether it's more of a, I don't know, an urban legend, but I seem to remember that when the movie was first released, it didn't have the to be continued title card there at the end. It they kind of added that maybe a little bit later when they figured out, yeah, we are gonna do a sequel for sure. But yeah, what a great ending, and yeah, what a great line too with,
yeah,
with
it's
Doc
just
Brown.
It's just a, like, what the heck? Realize the narrative possibilities if this just opened up. And you know, I know that there were obviously time travel stories and movies before then, but for me, it was the first, and it sort of still is in a lot of ways the definitive time travel movie.
It's pretty much the best. You might quibble a little bit in our formative years with another movie like Bill and Ted's, but. Yeah, even they didn't have a line like, "It's your kids, Marty. You gotta do something about your kids."
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's just,
that's
it's
pretty
just
great.
Such a perfect ending.
All right. Well, not as perfect though as number three on your list.
Number three is Casablanca. You know, he's going in there, and I've heard rumors that at the end they were writing it as they went. Like, and they didn't really know whether she was going to choose Rick or Laszlo or how she was going or whatever. And that tension sort of spilled over. But when he sort of pushes her off to go with this guy and says, no, you know, this is the way it's got to be, they don't get more heroic self-sacrifice. And in fact, you know, Bogey's whole career is summed up in that scene, right? Like,
how
that's
so?
It. That's who he is, and that's who he forever will be. And he's managed to now... You know, he's been dead 60 years, and he's managed to maintain and has a relevance that most people would die to have 10 years after they're gone. And he's still had because of that one scene.
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, one of the most iconic in all of film of all time, for
yeah.
Sure. But only number three, so what does number two have to be?
Number two, and I know it's a dark movie, but the way it is, I love the way Empire Strikes Back ends. Because I'm thinking of the end when not the very, very end, but just before when Han goes into the Carbonite, and, you know, he says, "I love you," she says, "I know," and just leaving you on that, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they just did this kind of thing. It's one of the best cliffhanger endings you're going to find.
Yeah, that whole last, action sequence.
The last 15, 20 minutes is probably Star Wars at its absolute peak.
Yeah, so yeah, and even the, I think, you know, even one of the most iconic images of Star Wars is that kind of in the last scene where they are kind of all looking off the deck, you know, and then the music starts, you know, and goes off.
And just before, I mean, you have the huge reveal that he is his father, you know.
Spoiler
and he cuts
alert,
his arm
yeah,
off,
right.
And then not only that, you know, the scene between Han and Leia, which is in its own way, is as romantic and as iconic as Casablanca.
Well, and also as ad-libbed, perhaps, as Casablanca, because it was
well,
going
and,
so
and,
long,
and
that's
people,
finally
people
just what he did.
Age, you know, especially, you know, boy, men of a certain age, when someone says, I love you, you kind of want to say to them, I know. I mean, you just kind of, in
true.
The back of your mind, you
true.
Hear that, because you just know that that's like, you know, and it's not because you want to be flippant or whatever, because that's what you want, that's the kind of what you're striving for, is that so
yeah, Empire Strikes Back reminds me of a line from the show How I Met Your Mother, where they're talking about how you make a mixtape, you know, another
mm-hmm.
experience formative of our youth, and they say, you know, it's gotta be all rise, and that's kind of the way Empire Strikes Back, the last sequence is, it just keeps raising the stakes higher and higher, and does reach a real satisfying ending there for it, but not the number one ending in your opinion. So give us that number
one.
There are
a lot of movies that were in contention here. You know, Sunset Boulevard. I love the end of that movie. I love her coming down with the stake. I do love it, and I want to give a shout out to the movies that I really love, just looking at them and love the way they end. But the movie that it's just perfect ending, and part of it is because of mine and your affinity for a certain type of movie, and that is the end to The Sting.
Yes.
You cannot plot. I love intricately plotted movies like that, where at the end all these little sort of loose ends sort of just come in with this nice neat bow, and it's like, and you know, all of a sudden you can watch the movie again and you can see things, and you're like, that's what. Oh yeah, I see. You know, I love
so,
that.
So I figured number one was going to be a con movie.
Like you just love movies that have twists, and there's no better. I don't think there's any better con movie than The Sting. I just don't think you can get, because that whole the end of that movie is just so perfectly like plotted and just it's just genius.
Well, that's one of the things I would say, you know, in my list, maybe in the top five, at least as an honorable mention, would be something very similar. Ocean's 11, very much like that. Even the movie, we might be the only two people who loved it, Matchstick Men.
I did love Matchstick Men.
You know
what? Yeah. Forget you to the people that hate it. It is a great movie, and it's
and Nick Cage is a national treasure.
I like National Treasure too.
You too.
And I know people hate that, and I also
even though the ending really stinks.
And you know what movie I like that people hate, and I don't know why they hate it. Now You See Me. I don't know why you hate the movie.
There's another good one where you find out how everything falls into place. So
I know exactly. Granted, I'm not trying to say that Now You See Me is the same type of experience as a Casablanca or a. Or you know, whatever. But it's a fun movie.
Well, listeners, on that note, we hope you've had some fun listening to this podcast as Brian does draw ever nearer to the completion of his quest. Thank you again so much for listening with us to these ramblings so far, and we hope that you'll stick around for a little longer as we join Brian for his last 10 movies. Again, you can check out Brian on Twitter at 10kmovies, T-E-N-K movies, or on his blog 10kmovies.com. We'll be back with you in a few weeks with Brian's 9,991st movie. Until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.